Welcome to the Near Post Local, football and futsal in the capital region, where too much football or futsal is never likely to be enough. I'm Peter Funnell. In tonight's program, we'll cover three things. We'll do a wrap on the men's and women's Premier League games over the weekend. We'll also have a lengthy interview with Christian Collins, one of the co-founders of Boomerang's Futsal Sala, and he'll bring us up to date on their preparations to contest the New South Wales Premier League. All good news in that story. And we'll deal with one other matter, a very serious matter, the appalling crowd behaviour by a section of the crowd at the Men's Premier League Grand Final. If you were there, you know what happened. But if you weren't there, you need to be aware of it. It was a disgraceful exhibition. The sum of it really is that it rendered the venue unsafe for family and ordinary spectators. It was an ugly business. But we'll get to that in a minute. Suffice to say that one club, Canberra FC, faces some very serious sanctions as a consequence of the aberrant behaviour of a section of their spectators. But first, let's deal with the Women's Premier League. There were three games played, Premier League Reserves and Premier League 18s. Two clubs contested all the games, Belconnen United and Woden Valley. It's hard to imagine two clubs doing this, but they did. Whether they can do it again next year is another matter, but that's the way it was this year. The Premier League 18s was a terrific game. Woden Valley had been dominant for most of the season, but Belconnen United made it an incredibly close game. Woden Valley won 1-0, but it was a damn good game. In the reserves, Woden Valley were no certainty to win this one, and Belconnen probably felt they may have had the edge. Well, again, very close game, and Woden Valley got its nose in front towards the end and won 2-1. Yeah, it was that close. But again, a fantastic game of football. In the Premier League game, Belconnen United were the fancied team. Woden Valley really hadn't closed the gap sufficiently this season to give you any confidence that they were likely to roll Belconnen in the grand final. On the other side, Belconnen United, an incredibly strong physical outfit, went from strength to strength as the season developed. They're a classy team. The end result was Belconnen United 4, Woden Valley 0. But both had very good seasons. They're clearly the two top teams. Just as clearly, there is a gap between first and second. Well, that's the challenge for 2012. On the men's Premier League side, four games were on offer. The Premier League game, the Premier League pathways, Premier League 18s and Premier League 16s. It's unlikely next season we will see these age divisions in their current form. The FFA has conducted an investigation of the playing levels in the various member associations, and the age divisions will certainly change. But leaving that aside, beginning with the Premier League 16 game, well, Woden Valley and Belconnen contested this. Woden Valley were the form team all season, and Belconnen United were the team that came good at the right end of the season. They rolled Woden Valley in the major semi-final, and Woden Valley lost its way in about the last 5 weeks of the season. Belconnen United looked a very polished outfit. Woden Valley had great difficulty getting into the game for any length of time, and only when they were 3-0 down and about 15 minutes to go did they produce a frenzied passage of football that clawed back two goals and held up the possibility of extra time. But time beat them and Belconnen United won. But Belconnen United were the better team and played wonderful football. Woden Valley can't have any complaints. They had a wonderful season. The Premier League 18s match had a tremendous amount to offer for anyone that had studied the form all year. This game offered so much. For anyone who'd studied the form all season, these two teams seemed to be the ones that were destined to meet in the grand final. Canberra FC won the premiership. They were almost untouchable. Their level of confidence must have been very high. They had beaten Woden Valley convincingly all three times they had met this season. The other little aspect of this is that the core of this Canberra FC team was a Woden Valley under 15 team that left with its coach to Canberra FC a while back. It's a little bit of history here, but in this case, it just made for better football. While on the Woden Valley side, for the first time in about 7 weeks, they had all their players fit, available, in the right positions, and they had come up with a system and style of play. They were going back to 4-3-3, and a tactical plan that was different to the other three times they had played Canberra FC. A bold stroke by the coach, but it produced results. The game was just incredible. Every Woden Valley player played to the limit of their ability, and that's what was required to beat Canberra FC. Anything less, and they'd have been rolled. The game ended in Woden Valley's favour, 2-0. It was a convincing win, but in fairness to Canberra FC, it was one win out of four this season. Canberra FC got the premiership and did it in great style. Woden Valley got the grand final and they did it in grand style. Can't say fairer than that. Great season, both teams, both well coached. The Pathways game also promised to be an interesting one. Olympic were clearly the best Pathways team this season. Matter of fact, I think the best Pathways team I've seen in a long time. And they were to be met by Cooma, who made a solid challenge during the season and had that level of combativeness that just might push Olympic off its game. Well, it didn't work out that way, and Olympic played precisely to their whole of season form. And I have to say I was pretty pleased with that. 4-1 was the final score, and it was an accurate reflection of the game and the season. Olympic really were that far in front. And that brings us to the Premier League fixture between Canberra FC and Canberra Olympic. Oh, if ever a game promised to be a cracker, it was this one. The last two occasions these two teams have met, they've been breathtaking, wonderfully different in styles, and each coach and team determined to have their style and their plan prevail. Rosters on both sides glittering with some of our best talent in the ACT. Well, you couldn't ask for anything more. And the only thing I can say is that the game ended in a scoreline of 8-5 in favour of Canberra FC. That is, Canberra FC scored 8 and Olympic scored 5. So you kind of get the idea that defence went missing here. However you want to analyse this game, it was just peculiar. I have to say, it really wasn't good football. It was certainly entertaining, though it wasn't a patch on the last two games they'd played each other. Ah well, that's grand finals for you. For me, the emergence of Canberra Olympic as such a powerful team in both Premier League and Pathways was the most fascinating aspect of this season. I found Canberra FC's football to be equally as fascinating, but more for the fact that they produced half a season where they looked like no one could touch them. They went away and played in an overseas tournament, and whatever happened left a lot of their form behind on the tour, and it took a lot of work for them to get back into the groove. On the women's side, for me, it was the further development of Belconnen United and Woden Valley as the two powerhouses in women's Premier League football, with a notable mention for Gungahlin United. Watch that space there. They are going to be a very powerful club, and they'll finish a lot higher next season. I understand Canberra Olympic is entering a team for 2012. Hope it's true. And that brings our season to a close. The Summer 20s are going to be up and running, and that's fantastic news. And I understand we may have as many as 10 teams in the Summer 20s. Look, if it's true, it is terrific news. Now, on to the last matter before we go to the interview with the Boomerangs. The conduct of a section of the Canberra FC spectators at the grand final was nothing short of disgraceful. I'll have more to say on this on the blog. For just this moment, I'll say this. So many of the things that we don't want to have happen at a football venue happened at Deakin Stadium. And they happened as a consequence of the aberrant and disgraceful behaviour of a section of the Canberra FC spectators. It must be fairly obvious to those that run that wonderful club, Canberra FC, that within the meaning of the FFA's Code of Spectator Behaviour, Canberra FC owns the outcomes that those spectators delivered. And so you know what I'm talking about. Right from the Premier League 16 game, a section of them set themselves up, staked a claim to a space on the wooden seating opposite the grandstands, the far side of the field to the grandstands, that is. And there they were, resplendent in their club and Croatian colours, waving Croatian flags and chanting in Croatian. Now, the other problem here is they are being progressively fuelled by alcohol. I and others saw several young individuals return from the area of the canteen with plastic shopping bags chock-a-block with cans of beer, and they started to get themselves progressively into the spirit. You didn't need to be real bright to work out that this was going to build as the games went on. Well, it did. It built in the under-18s game, because of course Canberra FC were playing there. It built a little further during the Pathways game, but there was no Canberra FC team in that game. But by the time the Premier League game was ready to get underway, there was a phalanx of supporters over there, 30 or 40 for sure, and they were well-fueled and in good voice. Flags flying and plenty of chants. The game no sooner got underway than flares went off. Yep, someone in that group had smuggled in pyrotechnics. Now, that's not appropriate, nor is it probably illegal to use those things, and certainly they shouldn't have been allowed into the venue, but they're pretty easy to conceal. The flares were then thrown over the back of the wooden stand into the parkland behind. And as several of us observed, oh no, not a grass fire. And had a grass fire got going, then who knows where that would have ended up. Housing, building site in the surrounds, indeed even the wooden stand could have burnt. It would have been an absolute disaster. Someone had the presence of mind over there to go and douse the fire that had started, but it didn't miss by much. But that wasn't the end of it. We got into smoke bombs. Yeah, that smoked out one side of the field. Spectators left that area of the stands. Some families left the ground, and others simply relocated because it started to get a bit dangerous. And it was threatening and dangerous. Capital Football staff and match officials were the subject of disgraceful verbal abuse. No one should have to put up with that. But one thing was abundantly clear. It was just about impossible, to remove these miscreants. They now were a serious problem. To cut a long story short, when the game ended, they invaded the pitch and enveloped the Canberra FC players. They now became a presence at the closing ceremony. When that was over, they moved forward to the area in front of the dressing rooms, occupied one area, and began the chant, Croatia, Croatia. Look, from where I was sitting, this took me back to the bad old NSL days and some of those horrible matches that occurred in the Sydney competitions of yesteryear. This is the very thing the FFA were leaving behind. Much more could be said of this and should be said of it. It was just an absolutely disgusting performance. There was no need for it. This group didn't do anyone any favours. And I can only imagine those hard-working senior people at Canberra FC who've given so much of their time and in some cases their personal fortune to make that club as good as it is. They must have been absolutely heartbroken at the sort of things these idiots got up to. But look, there were signs. In the game prior to last Saturday's game, that is the semi-final at Mackellar between CFC and Belconnen, flares were thrown there. Prior to the game, the social media was Twittering and Facebooking like mad. So there was an expectation, a build-up, some acceleration. The fires were being fanned. What could be done about that? Well, something will have to be done about it. Capital Football, in fairness, will have to look very closely at where it holds future grand finals. It was a beautiful day on a wonderful surface, but we can't go back to that again. Deakin Stadium wasn't secure. You could go in and out of it on the far side through the building site or throw stuff over the fence, that is alcohol usually, or the other pyrotechnics perhaps, and that's exactly what happened. So it's not secure. McKellar is a bit more secure, but maybe it's time now to locate this to a neutral venue. The first place that comes to mind is the AIS, that is that wonderful playing surface inside the athletic track. But that's for the future. I'm very reliably informed that Capital Football is pursuing action against those in the crowd they've identified. And let me tell you, where they've identified people in that crowd who are current registered players, those people are probably in receipt of notice to appear before a tribunal right now. And the penalties in front of them, if they're found guilty, are very significant. Football might be a memory for some of them for a while. And of course, there's the club itself, Canberra FC. Can't walk away from this. Those spectators were theirs. They certainly weren't anyone else's. And clubs are responsible for their spectators. Will they get fined? Will they have their Premier League licence revoked for a year? I don't know. We'll see what comes out of this. But one thing's certain, Canberra FC can't be let pass without a very substantial penalty. So that was the men's Premier League grand final. A mad game and a section of the crowd who were completely mad. They wrecked it for everyone. Was it entertaining? Only if you like horror stories. It wasn't good football and it wasn't good crowd behaviour. Well, football's football. There's always another game. In this particular case, those spectators rendered that ground and that environment unsafe. People were threatened. People were verbally harassed and abused. Alcohol was smuggled into that ground. Pyrotechnics were smuggled into that ground and used improperly during the course of the activities, putting other people in danger. What on earth did these people think they were doing? As to the visible presence of the Croatian flags and all that that would appear to indicate, well, that's just something else again. That's not necessary. This wasn't a national ethnic clash between Croatia and Greece. This was potentially one of the best games of football ever between two clubs in Canberra, Canberra FC and Canberra Olympic. The rest is just rubbish. Well, that's it. But some disciplinary action is definitely required, and in good measure, and that includes Canberra FC. We'll see what unfolds. But if it isn't hard and it isn't noticeable, we risk it happening again. Righto, now let's get on to a much better story, something that's productive and positive for football and futsal in the ACT. Boomerang's Futsal Sala.
I'm talking to Christian Collins, one of the co-founders of Boomerang's Futsal Sala, the first serious futsal club in the ACT. Now, they have a very interesting story to tell, and we've spoken to the other co-founder, Eddie Senator, on a number of occasions, but the significance of this is that this club campaigns in the New South Wales Futsal Leagues. And I'll stop the story there and say good day to Christian. How are you, mate?
Not too bad, Peter. How are you?
Pretty good. Now, let's just fill in the listener on the background to Boomerang's Futsal Sala, and then we'll come forward into the present day.
Okay, so basically, Eddie and I took a Capital Football tour to a futsal tour to Japan in 2007. And basically, we were just blown away by the professionalism of everything over there. Mm-hmm. And sort of thought to ourselves, you know, what can we do to increase the professionalism in Canberra? And so we came back, and there was a lot of changes going on in the futsal scene at that stage. They were trying to introduce a club-based structure into the Premier League. So we thought it was a good opportunity for us to get involved, start a club, and basically things have taken off from there.
They've certainly taken off. Now, you formed Boomerang's Futsal Sala a couple of years ago, as you've had, and you entered the New South Wales playing environment in futsal, and you started off in the second tier of the Premier League, which is the Super League.
That's correct.
Now, that really was a pretty mighty step for you two fellas to take, and of course the players who and parents who joined you on that campaign.
Yeah, a big thanks must go out to those parents. The commitment they showed in that first year was absolutely incredible. It took a lot of work from our end, but on the other hand, it took a lot of work from them, showing us commitment, showing faith in us that we had a product that was good and could develop their kids for them to be involved. So, so yeah.
And yeah, look, I think the other thing that has to be said is that if the listener is only just getting their kids into futsal now, is that whilst we play north and sort of south of the lake in community competitions, north and south Canberra futsal really aren't playing clubs as in the sense that we would know clubs to be.
That's right.
Is that fair comment?
That's a fair comment. And we are... I'm also on the futsal standing committee, and there are being steps to change that. It's slow. There's a lot of opposition to it from some people of the futsal community.
Mm.
But I'm pushing quite hard for a Sydney-type league to be started here in Canberra.
Mm-hmm.
So we are taking steps at the moment to get that up and running in the near future.
Mm.
But, tough.
Yeah, it is tough. And, of course, that North and South Canberra futsal organisations have done a Herculean job in organising competitions, and that's really what they are, competition organisers. And you get a team in, call them what you like, and enter your team and abide by the rules and play at the level, and they put you in and away you go. And that's great, but it doesn't necessarily, I'm probably going to upset someone here, but it doesn't necessarily produce top quality futsal across the age groups, does it?
No, that's right, and we've definitely seen that come nationals time over the past 4 or 5 years.
Mm.
The significance of the Premier League and Super League in New South Wales is, it's massive. The amount of development their kids have got from that shows at the national level. We used to dominate everything. I remember when I was 10, 11, 12, we'd go away and we'd win grand finals against the other ACT team, so it'd be an all-ACT final.
Mm.
And in recent years, the tides have changed. New South Wales have developed these leagues where they play their top players against their top players every week.
Mm.
And they've sort of come from second or third best in Australia to, well, basically they won everything last year, bar I think three.
Yeah.
So
it's just extraordinary, isn't it?
It is.
And I think that's the message out there for the listener, is that... the rest of the futsal community in different states has moved forward, and we've probably been a little bit slow there. The gap between our domestic competition and the nationals is just so big.
It's enormous.
Yep. Now that brings us back to you and Eddie Senator getting the Boomerangs Futsal Sala up and running, and it seems to me that what you've done in very short order, and you're really only in your third season, but in very short order, it's an impressive result. You've substantially bridged that gap we're talking about, and the Boomerangs are in 2 years in the Super League has now been promoted to the Premier League. Now, tell us a little bit about that. How did you get there?
Well, I've got a few stats here. In our first season, we were fifth in the club championship, 55 points behind the eventual champions,
right,
Enfield, who were on 228 points. In our second year, with a bit more promotion, people, word of mouth, sort of people telling each other how good it was and their experiences, we went from being 55 points behind the leader to winning the club championship with a round to spare on 254 points, which is the most a club has ever accrued in the Super League.
Good grief. I didn't realise it was that big.
So, yeah, so we were 9 wins ahead of our nearest competitor.
Wow. That's in the Super League?
In the Super League, yes.
Well, and I've got to remind people here that there are probably about, what were there, 10, 11, 12 teams in the Super League, maybe?
There was 13 including
13?
Last season, yes.
Yeah. And, we're talking about outfits like, you know, the Botany Bay Pirates, the Breakers, the Hills Brumbies, Liverpool, Harcoa, Sutherland, South Coast Taipans, West City Crusaders. You know, it is a real big net cast across that Sydney metropolitan area.
Big time. We even had a club from Katoomba.
Oh, really?
Participating last year, yeah.
Wow.
So the nets in New South Wales is getting even wider there. They're sort of going into those more regional areas.
Goodness me. So there we are. You have this massive improvement in 2010-11, and you're given admission to the New South Wales Premier League. This should make people stand up and take notice, because football clubs have often had a whinge here in the ACT about getting into New South Wales, but they have done it and not stayed there or not got round to doing it. But the Boomerangs in futsal are there, and as you quite rightly point out, futsal is absolutely dominated at the national level by New South Wales. So you're playing in the hottest domestic competition in Australia, is my view.
That's correct, and the New South Wales Futsal Premier League is widely regarded as the best futsal league in Australia.
Yeah.
Last season they had players from Queensland and also from ACT playing in their Premier League clubs. So these players were commuting each week to play at that level in the men's competition.
Goodness me.
You know, the level is quite outstanding.
Okay, so a young player here, male or female, wants to play top-class futsal, then the only place to do it is in the Boomerangs, or through the Boomerangs, here in the ACT.
At this point, that's how it is.
Yep, absolutely. Well, it seems to me that the Boomerangs, I'm not asking you to say this, but it seems to me that the Boomerangs Futsal Sala have solved a massive competitive issue for Capital Football and the futsal community. You're now really the bridge into higher level performance.
And that's something that Eddie and I spoke about when we approached Football New South Wales to gain entry into their leagues, is we need that higher level of competition to become more competitive at nationals. It wasn't about taking a stranglehold and taking over futsal in Canberra. It was more, we wanted to give kids another avenue for them to develop at a higher level.
Mm.
And like you said, we're starting to see that now in terms of our players competing at nationals and that kind of thing.
Well, it's true. And for the listener that might not be completely aware of this, and it certainly doesn't mean that anyone else's futsal experience isn't worthy, but of the roster you had in the 2010-11 season, how many of those players played in ACT age or open youth representative teams at the Nationals?
We had 74 players on our books last season.
Yep.
And there was, out of those 74, there was 63 that participated at Nationals.
Gee.
Of our players, and we had 12 coaches.
Gee.
And all but one of those coaches was a coach for one of the representative sides.
Oh, right, okay. Well, that sums it up nicely.
Yeah.
Boomerangs is really providing an outstanding opportunity for young players in the ACT to play at a higher domestic level, indeed the highest in Australia, and it's providing them with the best opportunity to present themselves for selection at nationals. That's a pretty outstanding outcome at the Boomerangs end. For in a short time, mate, you went right in and got the whole business rolling. It's amazing.
Thanks, Peter. It's we're quite proud of our efforts over the last 2.5 years.
Oh, it should be.
In developing this club into something that's now recognisable throughout the whole futsal community. And we've seen a massive increase in numbers this season.
Mm.
From 74 last year, we had 134 players trial this year.
Gee.
So we selected 108, and out of those, 98 of them played at the Nationals last year.
Oh, goodness.
So,
well, parents and players are voting with their feet, aren't they?
That's right.
They can see the sense in this. Well, that takes us further forward. That covers, you've jumped across the hole. You've trialled for the 2011-12 season. You've had a big response to that, and that in a sense was predictable because you were riding on the back of success and you were delivering a quality outcome.
Yep.
For players and a quality opportunity. Gee, there's so many positives out of this. I'm rambling here, but it just astonishes me that one pivotal strategic initiative in the futsal game here in the ACT has reaped such massive dividends. I've got to ask you this. What's it cost to run?
To run?
Yeah, yeah. And where on earth are you getting your money from? I mean, this is a club question.
As obviously I'm a student, so I don't have the funds to resource the club. So the parents obviously pay a registration fee. Yep. I try and keep that to a minimum. So putting it into comparison to some of the Sydney clubs, one of the Sydney clubs we played last year, I was talking to some of their management, and they were charging $500 for registration fee.
Wow!
For the season. Yep. We last year charged $200.
Yeah.
So it included shirts, shorts.
Yep.
Over the season, all the court hire for the games, some training and for referees costs and things like that.
Mm.
This season, our registration fees with Football New South Wales have gone up, so the price has also gone up to $245, but this year we're training every week.
Yep.
We have three officials on each game, and we've moved venues from the Southern Cross Stadium in Tuggeranong to the Institute of Sport. So.
Oh, you're doing it in that big basketball court area there.
Yeah, so we're
fantastic.
Playing four out of our seven home games there. So we try to get as many home games on the best field. We're in the best competition in Australia, so we thought we'd try and attempt to play at the best venue we could, and we identified that as the Institute. So
this is just so highly commendable. I keep singing your praises, but look, this is just fantastic. Nothing but good news here. So you've kept costs to a minimum. Obviously no great philanthropist out there bankrolling this. So
no, don't have any sponsors. So if listeners would like to get on board.
Oh, absolutely. I think this is a marketing certainty, this one. What a good news story for the ACT. So, but it illustrates the point. With good organisation, pointed at precisely the right solution and outcome, good outcomes for all of the players and the coaches and the parents, this thing can be done. But while I'm on that, you would play half your games here in the ACT at what will be now the AIS venue, and you play the other half at wherever the other clubs are located in Sydney. Would that be right?
That's correct.
Yep. As I'm looking at the Premier League listing from last year, you've got Campbelltown City Quake, Dural Warriors, Enfield Rovers, Inner West All-Stars, Mascot Vipers, Sydney Benfica, Sydney City Eagles and Western Raiders. Now, has anyone dropped out of there in order for you to go up?
So the Western Raiders were finished eighth in the Premier League Club Championship, so the team that finishes eighth gets relegated back to the Super League. So there's that relegation promotion type thing as a club, which is also a good incentive for the players to play well and win points for their clubs, rather.
Right.
The Sydney Benfica club actually folded, unsure of why, haven't really spoken to anyone about that.
Yep.
So they, along with us being promoted, they also, Football New South Wales also decided to promote South Coast Taipans.
Ah, right. I've seen them play. They're not bad.
Yeah.
Righto. So that indicates that you're going to play down in Sydney. There's a few locations there. Just tell us a little bit about these facilities you go to in Sydney to play. What are they like?
A lot of the Premier League clubs play at better venues. The requirements for the Premier League state that you must play on a international size court from 12 boys all the way up.
Yep.
So
yeah, I want to get back to 20. That. Yeah.
So it's quite often the case that the Premier League clubs play at better venues because the better venues can accommodate the bigger size court.
Mm.
Some of the Super League venues were pretty good. We played at Menai.
Mm.
They were quite good courts, so they play international size there.
Mm.
At the university in Wollongong was a good venue.
Mm.
There was some kind of iffy venues with really small courts and that kind of stuff, which made it hard to play on. But all in all, like, the venues are pretty good. Most of them have wooden floors, like the Institute, like Tuggeranong, like yep. Woden. You don't find many with the Empower type surface.
Oh, right, yeah.
So a lot of it's wooden spring floors.
Wooden parquetry kind of floor. Okay, so you're going to travel to Sydney for half your games. Has this been a problem, the transport side of things for the club?
Buses are quite expensive, and with keeping costs to a minimum, we've kind of made it clear to the parents that it's up to them to find their own way.
Yeah.
Like I said, the parents have been absolutely fantastic over our first two seasons, and the parents I've met so far this season have been brilliant as well. We send out a team list. We get managers for each team, and we send out a team list of contact details, and then they'll arrange. If somebody needs a lift, then they'll just jump in a car with somebody else. And
carpooling.
A bit of carpooling. Right. It's really sort of a big family type environment where everyone can sort of just call up anyone else, and if they need a hand getting there or something like that. So
that's great.
It's a really, really good environment for the kids to be in.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, you're going to play once a week. Are your games home and away on alternate weekends, or can you move the draw around at all to try and cluster a few games in later?
Pretty much it just goes on court availability. So whenever a team can get their home venue, believe it or not, a lot of the same issues we have here with courts they have in Sydney as well.
Oh, imagine so. Yeah.
So they're quite tight up there in terms of court bookings and that kind of stuff. So the draw is sort of all over the shop. We don't play round one against Campbelltown and then the same round in seven games time against Campbelltown. It's sort of all over the place, and we have I think four home games in a row, just because that was when we could get the yes. courts.
Yep.
So it's not home away, it's three maybe in a row at home and then four away or something like that.
Well, that makes sense though, doesn't it? You're going to play someone.
Yeah.
You're going to play someone. Now, just go back to this international size court, because this mightn't be something that the listener is entirely familiar with. We're used to playing our futsal on essentially basketball courts, however big or small they might be. And they do seem to vary a little bit in size from one place to another. But you're playing on international size courts. Just tell us a little bit about that and the impact that has on the game.
It changes the game completely. The game goes from being, you can pretty much score from anywhere if you're a 16-year-old on the court, to more of a tactical game. So you have to work the ball around, you have to play the ball. You can't throw it long and hope for a nod on and hope it goes in.
Yeah.
That's completely out the window. You have to keep the ball, you have to work your way in, and it's a lot more tactical.
Yep.
There's a lot more space, so you get a little bit more time on the ball.
Yes.
Obviously, defence is a little bit harder. There's more area to cover.
Yep.
But, it just becomes a much more tactical game, and it's completely different from playing on a little court.
But better to play.
Much better.
Yeah, I mean, the games I've seen the Boomerangs play here in the ACT, right from the young age groups through to the open competition, different game. And boy, is it interesting. Just terrific.
Yeah, it's speaking from personal experience, it's quite hard to transition from playing on a big court back onto a little court. It's very hard.
I was going to ask you about that because
very, very hard.
We jump forward to the Nationals. Of course, a lot of those age groups are played on essentially basketball courts.
Yes.
Although they're sort of, at the Empower Dome, it's turned around long ways, but it's really for space and crowd control. It is a different game on the international size court, and it's a better game for it.
It is, and a lot of the time, if you go to a Nationals game and you watch the New South Wales players play, a lot of them come from the Premier League, so they play on the big 42 by 25 metre courts.
Yeah.
And you see the way that they use the space on those little courts is completely different to a lot of the other states. They make sure they really hug those touch lines and they get nice and deep, so they're really opening. They're trying to maximise the space they have on those courts, and that's something that, our teams here in Canberra, you see Queensland, you see South Australia, these teams, they don't understand how to do that as much because they've never experienced playing on on a court with so much space.
Yes, you're quite right. They often leave a good couple of metres left or right, depending on which side they're on. And on the smaller courts, that's valuable space you can't concede.
That's right.
You know, you really want to be able to work with that. Now, if we're just going on from this international size court futsal, let's talk about its value to football. Your parents often wonder about that. I mean, it's well established that futsal makes a significant contribution to the technical ability of football players. But what would you have to say about it?
I just take one look at the Brazilians. Mm. They don't touch an outdoor football until they're 13 or 14, well into their teens. And some of the players that they've produced over the years, it just makes you wonder why people question it in Australia, in England, in places like this.
Yep.
What makes our system so much better than what they do in Brazil or what they do in Argentina?
Yeah, I'm with you. I personally get infuriated when futsal is referred to five-a-side football. What a load of nonsense! It's futsal.
Yeah, that's right. Whilst they have a lot of similarities between the two games.
The reference to futsal as five-a-side football always seems to me to be one as a, it always seems to me as being almost a bit of a put-down on futsal, because it's not five-a-side football. I understand where they get it from, but it's not. Futsal is a very different game, but it delivers up so much to football.
Yeah, you're right. The games complement each other very well, and
they do.
Personally, from my experience I've seen, it's easier to adapt from futsal to football than it is to go the other way.
Yep, I agree.
A futsal player is, 9 times out of 10, going to be a good player at football, but not necessarily going back the other way. So,
yep.
Whilst they complement each other quite well, they are vastly different games. They're completely different in terms of tactical, in terms of skill set. It's quite different.
Now, and the other thing, we'll just loiter on this issue of the international court. The impact of an international size court means, as you quite rightly point out, that you start to see a very different game unfold, far more tactical, and that the transference from that experience into football, I think, is just sensational.
Yeah, you're right there. You know, playing on that bigger size court, you learn to cover the space a lot better. You learn to angle your body. Body shape is ridiculously important in defending on the international size court.
Yes.
So those little things that you pick up around the court can make a huge difference when you transfer that back to the 11-a-side game.
Yep, I quite agree. Well, your season's in front of you in the Premier League. What are your modest predictions?
Modest predictions. I would like to see our teams make their respective top fours. I think our men's team is looking quite strong, as is our women's, and our youth men's team is quite outstanding. I think those three are probably our best shot at a title. But whether we can maintain that nationals type intensity week in, week out for 14 weeks, who knows?
Yeah.
To be honest, just between you and me, I'm happy to finish 7th in the club championship and stay up for another season.
Yeah, I was going to say, moving into the Premier League, you would clearly have the odd team that would press for the four, but, you know, off the bottom of the table and ready to make another jump in the next season would be a reasonable expectation. I think you've got to settle yourself into a totally different level of competition.
Yeah, that's right. And it
takes time.
A lot of similarities between our first year in the Super League and this year. We've gone into something completely different, something we've never experienced before. The goals of last year aren't going to be the same as the goals that we're putting in place this year. We just want to maintain that sort of mid-table area and, you know, win our fair share of games.
And look, tell me, how are your coaching staff feeling? Have you managed to keep most of your coaching staff?
Yeah, we've kept all but one from last year.
Yep.
And we've also picked up Van Manthongsi, so she's quite experienced.
Oh, she's very experienced.
Yeah, played in the National League back in the early 90s,
yep.
or late 80s, early 90s.
Yep.
So she's a brilliant addition to our coaching staff.
One of the spin-offs here in this experience with the Boomerangs is that coaches must be being confronted with some serious coaching dilemmas every game at this level of competition.
Yeah, you're quite right. And it's not only the coaches that are being challenged week in, week out. We've also got referees that are now moving up into that Premier League.
Yep.
So really it's not just developing the players, it's developing our coaches, it's developing our referees all together. So there's not a lot of negatives in that scenario.
No, and if I had an observation of the Nationals from time to time, is that frequently we drop in a coach, a good football coach, and maybe not such an experienced or knowledgeable futsal coach, and the learning curve would just be a bit steep, I think. But it seems to me that if you've got solid coaching experience in a rugged environment, like the Super League and now the Premier League, your coaches are going to become very, very game savvy.
Yeah, well, to put it into perspective, out of the New South Wales contingent that comes to Nationals, I would say approximately 90 to 95% of their players and coaching staff come from the Premier League. So it's a chance for our coaches week in, week out to test themselves and to learn amongst the best coaches that New South Wales and possibly Australia.
Oh, look, that's terrific. Boomerangs Futsal Sala. It's just a remarkable futsal story for the ACT. And it seems like it's been a while, but it's only in its third year, and yet it's achieved so much. Christian, I don't know what else to say, mate. I look forward to seeing your home games. You'll put a competition draw up on your website.
I will indeed.
And we'll be able to get to that, and you'll find that at www.boomerangsfs.com.au. And if you've got any questions you want to ask, we'll get onto the website and contact Christian here, who's on the other end of this phone, and ask away. But by all means, get to the games, and they'll be run at the AIS at the big basketball stadium there. Well, not the big basketball stadium. They'll be run at the AIS at their big training venue, which is a whole bunch of basketball courts in it. So you've got good facilities, fantastic futsal, and it's almost a whole day of futsal. Your first game kicks off about mid-morning, and the last one ends in the afternoon.
Yeah, we kick off at 12:15, and the last game kicks off at 6:15, and we're setting up a barbecue this year. We've got a little canteen running out there, so there'll be plenty of food for everyone as well.
Fantastic. And any sponsor out there, and I can't imagine that there wouldn't be someone out there who thinks that this isn't a fantastic promotional vehicle, which it is. It's quite unique. And all drawn from the ACT. Get on to Boomerang's Futsal Sala and cut yourself a deal. You won't be disappointed.
Thanks, Peter.
All right, mate. Is there anything else, Christian, that we've missed for Boomerangs?
We're currently in preliminary discussions about running a futsal tour next year to England, Italy, the Canary Islands and Spain. But
wow!
So, Eddie and myself have got a few contacts in those areas, and Roger Cure, who is the futsal technical director, has played professionally over in Italy, so
yeah.
he's got a few contacts over there. So we're currently in consultation with a travel organisation to see if we can get that off the ground for mid-June next year.
Oh, fantastic. Gee, I hope that does get off the ground. All the more reason for good sponsors to get behind the Boomerangs.
It'd be a fantastic experience. I've been there once myself, and the level of futsal over there is just something else.
Ah, wonderful. Christian, done a great job, mate, you and Eddie. Doing great things for futsal and for the football community in the ACT. Well done, mate.
Thanks, Peter. It was great to talk to you.
Okay, buddy.
You have been listening to the Near Post Local on 2XXFM, where too much football or futsal is never likely to be enough. Football and futsal in the capital region. Go to the podcast for this program at www.nearpostlocal.blogspot.com. You will find a lot of interesting interviews and items there for the discerning football or futsal tragic. Enjoy your futsal and football. See you next time. Ta-da. Round and round, up and down, through the streets of your